Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to take a quick minute to talk about one of the sponsors of this podcast. I had a lot of different supplement companies approach me wanting to sponsor the show. I wanted to pick a company that produces products that I would personally use and would genuinely recommend to my clients. NeedToBuildMuscle.com makes hardcore products designed for the serious athlete. They produce a wide variety of different products such as nutrient partitioners, liver aids, fat burners, post-psychotherapy products. You can use the code TREVOR10 to save 10% off your entire order. Support them and you support the podcast. Now on to our episode. This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. We are coming at you live from the Evolutionary Radio headquarters. As always, my co-host Steve Smee is joining me.
Hey, good evening, guys. First day of summer is today. We have yet another fantastic guest for the show. Who do we got tonight, Trevor?
Joining us on tonight's episode is IFBB Pro, Fred Biggie Smalls. So Fred, the first question I want to ask you is, I've been a big fan of yours for a while. You obviously have a great physique, but how did you learn to pose like that? For any of our listeners who have never seen Fred Smalls pose, he's like professional breakdancing quality. Do you have a background breakdancing, or is it just something you've always been interested in? Let our listeners know.
Well, first, let me start by saying I'm excited to be on Evolutionary Radio tonight, and I appreciate the opportunity to let the world know a little bit about inside of what I'm thinking, what I'm doing. So thank you for that. when I was younger, like in high school, I used to do a lot of dancing. Me and my buddies, we go on different school dances and things, and we battle other, you know, school crews and stuff like that, and breakdancing and things like that. But oddly enough, a real dance instructor saw us doing dances on Main Street, which is a big festival in Delaware, and she wanted to recruit me because she was big into the competitive trained dance field. So, like, you know, dance with jazz, ballet, modern, things of that nature. And so she had asked my mom, would I be interested? And I played football, played traditional sports. And I knew that Herschel Walker did like ballet and stuff like that to be better in terms of football. So I was like, sure, I'll try it. And within months, I started competing in the practice of jazz. And I enjoyed it. So then I pretty much stayed with training in the disciplines of jazz and modern, mostly throughout, you know, all well into my junior year of college, and danced with notable professional choreographers and things of that nature. So dance has always been in my background, you know, both street dancing and train dancing. And when I was, you know, back at 190 pounds, I actually had dreams of dancing in New York with on Alvin Ailey's crew, which is like world renowned for dancing. So you know, bodybuilding, I was also a two-time NCAA powerlifting champion, and I was also a U.S. national champion twice and a world champion as well, once, and in powerlifting. And the reason why I actually chose bodybuilding as opposed to powerlifting is the element of being able to perform in front of an audience. So that's truly where my heart is. I love performing. I love entertaining the fans. And I love being strong. So the two put together, you know, pretty much equates to bodybuilding. And that's what's always, you know, that's what I end up doing.
Me and Steve are two white guys. We got no rhythm. Fred, no, it's if you see me dance, like you'd come up and be like, are you okay? Like you'd think something was wrong. I'm that bad. Fred, when did you do your first bodybuilding show?
Actually, when I was 18, so back in, I'm going to date myself a little bit. Back in 1994, I did my first AAU competition, and I didn't really know what I was doing. At that time, I, you know, you ask people in the gym and they kind of give you this advice, that advice, you know, two people say this, two people say that. And unlike the guys today, it's have it so easy because there's Google, where they can just go on and I want to do a contest. What do I got to do? And if they actually put, you know, due diligence into researching it, there's a lot of information out there that they can probably do really well their first time out. I did well. You know, there was a class of about 18 guys. I took second in the teenage division. But that was really like just putting information from this person together. And then after the show, you know, like I met all these people backstage and they're like, you know, this person's drinking water, this person's not, this person's eating this person's not. And I was just this young kid. So I kind of fell in love with it for my first time on stage. But I knew that I needed to figure out what I was doing because I did my first show in 94 and I was AAU. But then I tried to do an NPC show and, you know, it wasn't nearly as big. And I did the teenage class, but I got last. So, you know, we come off stage and my mom's like, if we're going to keep doing this, you probably ought to find a trainer. And so then, you know, I was looking for trainers and, you know, there wasn't really trainers for it. It was more like, you know, this guy did it. He said, I can help you. Or this guy thought they knew how to do it. But, you know, they weren't really training, helping someone else. So, you know, so there was definitely a need for it. And then, you know, as I got into trying to do another competition, you know, this guy says they're going to help you. This guy says they're going to help you. But nobody's following through. So you end up making crazy mistakes. Like my second show, I remember I read this book called Muscle. And it was about a kid. And he was trying to do a show. He was skinny, got picked on and stuff. But he had a section in it where he was like, I only eat 500 calories for a week. So I tried to do 500 calories for a week. And that was terrible. I'm in college trying to take classes and trying to do workouts and all that stuff. And I'm literally eating like a stalk of broccoli and half an apple and like a couple pieces of chicken for every meal, trying to stay within like 500 calories. And obviously I didn't, but I was trying to. And by the end of the week, I probably lost all my muscle, a ton of weight. And I could see like one ad and I was like, yeah, I'm ready. So, you know, you realize that, man, you know, like when I got done that show, I realized, you know, I want to really learn about nutrition. And that's what kind of got me interested in actually training people and really getting into fitness a little bit. Cause I realized, you know, man, it's not a lot of people out here that are reliable. And it's much different as today now as a trainer every block. But back then, in the mid 90s, it wasn't like that. So, you know.
So those of you who are listening, Fred Smalls, you can go on his Instagram right now. Fred Biggie Smalls is his Instagram. Yeah. Check out his pictures. He is a big guy. Those of you who don't know much about him. So Fred, tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up? What sports did you play growing up? Obviously you're a blessed athlete. Did that translate to sports like football and wrestling and stuff like that?
Well, actually, I'm from Delaware, that's on the East Coast. And, cause I believe most of your listeners are in Canada, right?
No, we're actually 90% US.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So, but Delaware, yeah, actually I'll go to places in the US and be like, what's Delaware? It's the first state in the union, but, we're very small. So I went to Delaware. I went to, high school. I played the typical sport, football, wrestling, did a little track, but I was naturally good, but I wasn't putting in the work. And the funny story about that is, like wrestling is a perfect example. I went to maybe like one camp during the summer, but I would never put in extra time into it outside of practice. Like I was never at home working on my drills, never at home, you know, or doing any extra workouts in the off season other than maybe a one week camp and then just during the season. And too busy being involved with, you know, girls and other extracurricular activities. So, you know, though I had the ability to wrestle varsity, and which I did in the first couple weeks of the season, then I got hurt. But throughout scrimmages and various tournaments, I had beaten pretty much most of the people that were top five in the state that year. And but because I kind of milked an injury that I got, I could have been back within a month. I kind of milked it. I actually didn't even get an opportunity to wrestle in the state tournament because my coach knew I was milking it, and he pulled me off of the team for individuals and only allowed me to wrestle the state team finals. So that kind of stuck with me and resonated with me as something that really, really bothered me a lot. Actually bothered me for quite a long time. And actually until I turned pro as an IFBB professional, it actually stuck with me. It was something I was ashamed of, you know. But now I realize it's something that's a tool. And if I tell it, you know, it can probably help with all the other young kids because, you know, what I always try and teach my kids is you got to give 110% all the time because the only thing you can always control is your effort. And when anytime you shortcut yourself, if you don't accomplish something because you put a lack of effort into it, you will regret it, you know, and that's something you'll kick yourself for later. And then also, like, you know, another piece of great advice I got, because I was just pretty good, you know, I was good at everything. I had varsity lettered, 2-year varsity on all the teams I did. But I could have been all state champion if I had applied myself. That was just all pure talent, you know. And then going to my college days, you know, I graduated from Salisbury State University. I met my powerlifting coach, Dave Nettles, and he was a, you know, 1,000-pound squatter. He was a champion in his own right. But, you know, I had to really fight for his approval to get accepted on the team because he saw me as this pretty boy trying to do bodybuilding who just thought about doing powerlifting. And he didn't really respect me in that way. But then after he saw me lifting a couple competitions, he was like, oh, and he started putting more energy and more effort into coaching me. And but one thing he did, I got eighth at the NCAA's my sophomore year in college. And he pulled me aside and said, you know, you're trying to be a bodybuilder, you're trying to do the dance club, because I was still, you know, heavily in dance at that time. You're trying to do soccer club, wrestling club, you're trying to do all this stuff. And now you go out for spring football in college, he's like, you're never going to be a professional football player. You're too short and not quite that fast. He's like, you're too big to commit to being skinny enough to be a professional dancer. He's like, you're doing all this extra stuff. He said, you can be a great powerlifter, but you either be a jack of all trades and good at all of it, but a master of nothing, or you can just pick one and be phenomenal at it. And, you know, it was a great lesson because from that point forward, there was, you know, I probably did 4 or 5 tournaments per year, or meets, powerlifting meets per year, and they were all national level in various organizations. And by the time I graduated college, I had only lost one meet. And after that talk, I'd only lost one meet. And I ended up with the number one total amongst junior lifters in the world in 1997. So, but it's him focusing me and stop saying, doing this, doing that, doing this. Take all the distractions away and focus on one thing. And, you know, I would say that anything that's been a barrier for me is always, you know, it's not knowing how to say no enough, you know, and trying to accept all things to do, to be all things for so many people. You know, but being able to focus on one particular thing and do one thing the best I can, that's always your key to success. And I kind of learned that early, you know.
Fred, being a bit of an OG and being in the sport so many years, what are your thoughts on how the sport, the direction the sport's heading and social media? Like, I know when you first started bodybuilding, I don't think Instagram was even a thing. And now,
Nope. It
almost depresses me. Like, if you go to your typical gym, people are more interested in taking, you know, selfies and Snapchatting and then actually working out. Like, it's...
Right.
What are your thoughts on that? And then also, like, the new categories, the new men's physique, the new classic physique. It seems like people almost don't want to be bodybuilders anymore.
Right. I got an interesting take on it. I usually differ from a lot of my colleagues in this. Because a lot of the old school guys go, man, the game has changed. It's not what it used to be. And I kind of disagree from that. You know, like when we talk about competitions. The new divisions are a blessing to guys that are hardcore bodybuilders, because before we used to have maybe 5 competitions in a local market. And when I say local market, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, to try and compete in. And everybody's trying to compete in the same show. So yeah, you might have more bodybuilders in the show, but you really didn't have that many athletes. Now you got local shows that are hitting 300, you know, sometimes 500 athletes in a local show, which has enticed promoters to want to put a show up every week. You know, so for the young guys coming up, there's a lot more opportunity to compete, which, you know, if you're doing the sport, you learn your body the more you compete. So it's actually, from that sense, good. And if you look at the natural progression of things, the only thing that's really hurt are some of the smaller organizations, because what you would do is, a lot of guys back in the day would be like, ooh, NPC, that's where the big guys go, and not really go into the NPC. And all the NPC did was, well, let me go ahead and throw Men's Physique in. And now Men's Physique is nothing more than what, you know, or I really don't like Men's Physique as much, but I respect it, because you got to work really hard to get in that kind of condition. But Men's Classic Physique, I think, is amazing. And all that is where a lot of the guys used to compete in Musclemania, OCB, NBC. Now they've come over to an NPC and they got a place to compete, you know? Because maybe, you know, a lot of guys don't want to be as big, or they want to be as big, but they just haven't gotten there yet. So you see a natural progression, whereas the guy might have to fight in the bantam or lightweight for a long time before he got to light heavyweight. And now that's not the case. Now you can go in right now and you can win in classic physique. So I think that from that standpoint, it's a blessing. As far as social media goes, I think, you know, we need to embrace it, because now, instead of you depending on a supplement company to give you a contract, depending on a magazine to give you some shine, you know, and that can be based on politics, who you know, all types of stuff. Now you have the ability to create your own image however you want to do it. Podcasts, you know, Instagrams, Facebook, all this stuff. You can create whatever image you want to create, be whoever you want to be. Now, the hard part for young guys is what's crap and what's real. You know, that becomes the hard part, because if I go on Google and say, how do I build my legs? You get a million articles that come up, but probably only 10 are really that good. And so you have to know how to weed through the unnecessary to get to the stuff that really matters, but it's out there. The information's there. And, you know, and for us as coaches, if you're good, the beautiful thing is people know you're good. If you're bad, people know you're bad, because nothing's hidden anymore. You know, if you train Joe Blow and she looks like crap, he's still putting up selfie after selfie about getting ready for my show, you know, so if you're good, it's going to ring out that you're good. And so I think it's. I don't really see a whole lot of negative in it, man. I really just see an opportunity for everybody, whether you're an amateur or a seasoned pro, to make more money, to affect more people. And if you love what you're doing, and you know, I always preach to my staff of trainers, it's not about the money. It's got to be about the people. It's got to be about loving to help people. And once that happens, then the money's going to be there regardless, because you're doing it with passion. You're doing it from your heart, and you have everybody's best interest. And it's not about making a quick buck. And if that's the case, then your image is going to be solid and you're going to do great in this market, but you have an opportunity to be better than you ever could before. Because before, when we were coming up, how could I train a guy in India? He didn't know about me. That's too far away. But yet I just helped the guy win a show in India. You know, and that's the beauty of social media, the internet, and the way it is now. So I love it.
So speaking of that, Fred, we want to get into kind of the economic thing. You brought it up. A lot of our listeners, maybe, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, they want to kind of break into the industry, perhaps, you know, get into bodybuilding competitions and stuff and make a living at it. You know, now you bring up a good point. The internet allows you a better opportunity to do that, link with people overseas. Back when you started, though, did you have to do a full-time job when you first got into bodybuilding before you started getting the sponsorships? Or did you make a living just in bodybuilding as well?
No, I mean, actually, you know, I've always had my business since 1997. I had no aspirations of being a professional bodybuilder. At first, what happened was, You know, I like I said, 1994, I started in bodybuilding, but it really wasn't until 2006 that I would say I was a bodybuilder and made a concerted, a serious, concentrated effort on wanting to turn pro. Before then, you know, like I did bodybuilding, but I wasn't a bodybuilder. Like, you know, you see me on show day, you're like, man, he looks really good. You see me 2 weeks later, you're like, man, is he a powerlifter, strong man? What is he doing? Because he looks fat as shit. And, but now, you know, we try and stay in shape year round, and we try and live the lifestyle, you know, but it took me a long time to get to that point. And, cause it just didn't mean enough to me. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. Like, my dad has, a insurance company, real estate company. My uncles do investment companies. So my whole family, all my uncles have their own businesses except one. And, my dad had 9 brothers and sisters. So, you know, even his sisters had businesses. So that's what I was always focused on. Business, business, business. And, I think my first kind of, taste of wanting to maybe think about being a professional bodybuilder came in like 2000. I went to, the NPC Nationals in New York, and I saw Victor Martinez win the overall. But I was amazed. There was like all this media attention. There was, all this, you know, rows and rows of media. Now, at that time, I was only competing in WrestleMania and AMBC, so I'd never seen that before. But when I went, I was like, wow, you guys look like, you know, like Flex Wheeler. Like Flex Wheeler, I've always admired his physique, and that's always been my favorite bodybuilder. These guys look amazing, you know, and I'm looking at all the people, but then it was Beacon Theater, and it was sold out for bodybuilding. I was like, wow, this is awesome. So, that was the first time I thought about, you know, maybe I do want to do bodybuilding more. But I always held my job, had my business, training people, doing nutrition, and I was doing really well at it. So, you know, the thought of needing bodybuilding to make money wasn't there. And then the end of 2000, I bought a gym. I bought a Gold's Gym. And you know, those were definitely some great learning experiences, but a very stressful time in my life. Because the business was just hard. I knew how to be a good personal trainer. I really didn't know how to be a good gym owner. So I lost a lot of money in doing that. And,
isn't the franchise fee for a Gold's, Fred, like about $250,000 or $500,000?
Well, back then when I did it, it was probably like 50,000 a year, okay, or something like that.
So you pay, you had to pay that up front and then also pay your employees and stuff. So that made, pretty much puts you behind, pretty much, right? Is that what you're saying? Very difficult to turn a profit?
Yeah, let's put it this way. I had to make $45,000 a month before I made a dollar.
Oh, so, wow, okay.
So, jeez. Yeah, so that was a lot of pressure. Remind you, I'm only 24 at the time. So, you know, I was doing everything fast. Like, it was just, how can I be a millionaire by the time I'm 30? That was all I was focused on at that time. So bodybuilding was like, yeah, I love doing it. It's cool. But it wasn't how I saw myself becoming a millionaire, you know? And then I got married right after that. And, you know, priorities changed. So I kind of got out of bodybuilding for a little bit, came back to it in 2003. And I won the overall Jan Tana. And then that's when I kind of said, maybe I do want to be a pro, because I met Matt Duvall, you know, God rest his soul. I met Matt Duvall. He was helping me, he was coaching me, and, you know, he was telling me all the opportunities you need to make. At that time, he got sponsored by MuscleTech. It was crazy. Like, when I turned pro in 2010, right out the gate, MuscleTech started paying me. It's not like that anymore. You're not doing that anymore. You know, companies aren't paying thousands of dollars to amateur athletes, and because you have too many kids out here to have Instagrams that have, you know, 500,000 followers, and MuscleTech can go to them and say, hey, here's you know, $500 a month and some products, and the kids are more than willing to post up MuscleTech. So, you know, it's just not the same anymore. But back then, you know, I was getting paid right out of the gate as soon as I turned pro. Next day, I got money dropped in my account, and I was like, oh, man, life's great. But, you know, what happened with as far as making a living on it, sure, I had my times where I was like, oh, man, I love being a bodybuilder, and I'm living off bodybuilding. But what I would suggest to kids is don't it's the same thing Branch Warren said to me years ago. He said, let life pay for life and bodybuilding pay for bodybuilding. That way bodybuilding stays fun. You know, if you're going to a show and you don't have a great sponsor, but you're depending on bodybuilding to pay you, how can you have fun with it? It's too much pressure. You know, and we don't make enough as from shows, unless you're going to win the Olympia or the Arnold. And, you know, there's only a few people that do that, right? So out of all the people that bodybuild. So unless you win those two shows, you're really not going to be able to have a good quality of life, you know? And when I say quality of life, you know, being able to, you know, with me, you know, I support a family of six, you know, my wife, me, and my four kids. And we have a great lifestyle, you know, but it's because of my business, not because of bodybuilding. But what bodybuilding has done is it allowed me to reach a larger platform of people. And it's allowed me to create credibility for my business. So I've always done bodybuilding for the pure part of, I would work out for free. I would compete for free. I always did. I never did it for the money. The money comes from my business, you know, but any money I make in bodybuilding, it's gravy. So, I don't think you're going to make a mint from bodybuilding. Now and the ones that do, there's like six that do, you know,
yeah, we have a lot of, I was going to say real quick, and I'll let Trevor jump in. We have a lot of guys on the forum that come on and they're like in their late teens, early 20s, and they actually think that they'll become millionaires through bodybuilding. And I'm like, dude, you can't even make your football team in high school and you seriously want to be a professional bodybuilder? So it's like I always tell them, dude, get your education or start a business and then do bodybuilding for fun, exactly what you were saying, and then it can be a beautiful thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can make great money, but it's not going to come from competing. It's going to come from the competing along with the appearances, the exposure, all that kind of stuff. And what do you got to do to get that stuff? You have to be you have to have a niche. You have to be great. You know, you have to be really, really, really awesome to get those type of things, you know? So I think people have a misconstrued, like, oh man, I want to get a supplement sponsor. Well, why should the supplement company invest in you? You know, what are you offering them that they can't get from somebody else or from a top pro because it's really not about being a pro anymore. It's about being someone of significance that people want to follow and want to attract you, want to be, you know, want to live and see what you're doing. That's really what it's about. Like, you know, you're basically creating your own reality TV show in this industry now. And if you can do it well enough, as Rich Pianus showed you, or as, you know, Ulysses Grant has showed you, as Simeon Panda has showed you, it's not about winning shows. It's Michael Hearn. I mean, you know, like, these guys aren't top professionals. They're great at getting people to love them, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's crazy being crazy strong and Michael Hearn, or being crazy ripping Ulysses Grant, or being, you know, just a personality that's larger than life, as in Rich Piana, you know, like whatever it's going to be. But you're either going to be famous because of who you are, or because of, you know, whatever infamous act you're doing at that time, you know? So.
Or you could be a source of humor. You know, you could be like that bro science YouTube guy. Fred, are you?
Yeah, he's hitting, right?
Are you currently working with supplement companies, Fred?
Am I working with any supplement companies, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm working with Blackstone Labs right now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
How long have you been with them?
I actually just signed with them yesterday.
Okay.
I just signed with them yesterday. So it was an opportunity to be back in a worldwide market. And right now I sideline with an injury and they're taking a chance on me. And I appreciate that. And we're going to, you know, and like, you know, I'm with Generation Iron as well. So, you know, with me, it's more like, you know, I'm educating people, teaching, and looking to come back with a bang. You know, like last time we were on top was in 2016 before I got sick. And, you know, for those that don't know, I got severe salmonella poisoning, lost, you know, 40 plus pounds in 1 week in the hospital and almost died. I had just taken second at the Arnold Asia in Hong Kong. And, you know, so we were getting ready to go to Olympia with a lot of momentum behind us. And, you know, literally 10 days out from Olympia, I'm in the hospital fighting for my life because my kidneys are shut down. My they were failing a heart attack. My bowels shut down. I mean, so it went from being on top of the world and thinking, man, I'm going to Olympia and I'm going to be top 10 in Olympia to, man, I'm hoping I can just get out of this hospital. So, you know, and a week later when I got out, I went in at 240 pounds ready for the Olympia. So I had no fat on me, came out at 203 pounds. And,
tell us a little bit, because I heard from the grapevine you have a pec tear too, but tell us first, how did you get your salmonella poisoning? Did you eat like some old meat or old eggs or something? What happened there? Do you know?
No, I mean, basically what happened was I got done the show. We were super psyched. We just qualified for Olympia and, you know, so I was, you know, just on cloud nine and so I was flying back from Hong Kong and I'm going through the airport, just eating everything. But then, you know, when you fly and, the premium class and stuff coming back, they give you the special lounges and stuff to go to. And they had all this fresh, authentic Hong Kong food and I was just eating all of it. And, I guess something didn't agree with my system. So I started getting sick like the day I got back, but I was ignoring it because I knew I had the Olympia to get ready for. So I just kept pushing through it. And I had a little bit of, you know, I had some sickness going on, but I just kept pushing through it and saying, I'm good. And it got to a point where, you know, Labor Day weekend, my wife is like, Fred, you haven't really eaten anything in 2 days. I'm like, I know, but it's just a stomach bug of some sort. I'll deal with it. I'm good. And then it got to the point where, you know, I could barely keep my head up. And then my sister, who's a vet, she kind of came over, looked at my vital, and she's like, we're going to lose them. So they rushed me to the hospital. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, well, they're going to give me an IV. I'm going to get some stuff. I'll be home tomorrow. And they're like, yeah, you'll be lucky if you're out of here in 7 days. So, yeah.
So that's pretty scary. I mean, traveling overseas, it's kind of scary. Like, you know, stuff like that could happen. I've traveled overseas too. I had a person with me over in the Dominican Republic and they got severely sick, from the food, and you have to really be careful. Yeah. That sucks. So, what ended up happening with your pec tear? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I came back and, I finally got back on stage looking the same size I was before, that I was in 2016. I actually got back on stage the end of 2017 bigger. Like I'd done some shows previous because I still had issues with my stomach all the way up until July of 2017. So, you know, you figure from September of 2016 to July of 2017, I'm dealing with stomach problems the whole time. And, you know, so that gets annoying and it really largely dealt around anytime I eat large amounts of protein. So, because when you eat protein, you're more acidic and my body was definitely getting more acidic and was dealing with all this inflammation. I'm dealing with, you know, my good bacteria, my gut not going back to the way it needed to. So finally in July, we got it fixed. I got back on stage just to see if I still was interested and I fell in love with the sport again. I did the Chicago Pro, I got aged, but I was probably the happiest guy ever in second because it just felt amazing to be back in that realm, be back on stage, be around my IFBB brothers and just see the fans again. You know, they haven't seen me in so long. You know, because if you know my history, I used to compete 8 or 9 times a year. So so basically, I get ready for the Arnold Europe, you know, in prejudging, I'm getting prepared for top six, end up falling to 10th, but it was great to be back on that level of stage and be fighting and prejudging. And then my stomach just had a little irritation during the day and I wasn't able to control my stomach. So they marked me down for that. But, you know, as far as size conditioning, I was right there with being compared with, Victor Martinez, Max Charles. So it was great. You know, I felt like, yeah, I'm back. And then we got ready for the Arnold this year and everything's going great. Everything's wonderful. And, you know, me and my coach, George Ferrer, we just missed the peak the day before. You know, like if I had to look like I did even a week out, you know, I strongly feel like I went and I saw Steve Weinberger. He's like, man, you're going to be in the battle. but I strongly feel like if I had to look like I did even a week out, I've been in that top six with the Arnold. So instead, I dropped all the way down to 11. And so when I came back from the Arnold, I said, okay, well, we're going to get ready for the Indiana show. And that didn't go as planned as I wrote either. You know, I thought I was going to do much better there. Again, things didn't work out at the end. So I put on more muscle than I was carrying before, but the things I was using the peak before weren't working this year. So, you know, you get a little frustrated. So I said, let me take a step back, figure out what's going on. And I started training like I was training in powerlifting again. And I was hitting great numbers and everything's going great. And, you know, again, not listening to your body, which is, you know, any young listeners out there, listen to your body. It will tell you a lot about what you need to know. not listening to my body, you know, I put on 585 on the bench and went for it. And I didn't have a good spotter. And as soon as I took it off, I felt like it wasn't right, but I was like, I'm gonna try it. And as soon as I started to push, I felt it going, felt my pec ripping. And, the guy who was spotting me just couldn't grab me, wasn't strong enough to pull it off me. And honestly, people were like, why'd you pick that guy to spot? Cause I didn't think I needed it. I had just done, you know, 550 for two, 570 for a single. I really didn't think I would need it. So, you know, it's just a mistake in the gym and I end up tearing my pec. But I got, it's a blessing because it didn't tear from the attachment. It's only 30% torn. So I'm still in recovery for that. I just finally can get my arm back behind my, you know, back up almost above my head. It's starting to move. I'm starting to do some, being able to do some things. So, you know, I'm hoping by the end of the summer, we can be back to train full 100% so that I can be back on stage for an early show in 2019. So
yeah, I tore my rotator cuff too, either militaries or bench, but I even know it was torn. I actually went like 2 years with a torn rotator cuff until I did an MRI. Cause I told the doctor, I'm like, why am I getting inflammation down my arm? And he's like, you got a torn rotator cuff. So he gave me an MRI. So what's going to happen now with your torn pec? It's only 30%. Did they say it's just going to eventually just fill up on its own?
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically, you know, like cosmetically, the swelling is still there. It just happened on May 22nd. So swelling's still there. I'm actually supposed to be going away next week. So when I get back, I'm actually going to a doctor and we're going to determine whether we're going to do the PRP treatment, if it's going to even need it, or we're just going to do a lot of work on the scar tissue and stuff. So in there to try and smooth it out. But basically, really, from a functional standpoint, I feel like I could be back real soon. It's just a matter of we're going to have to make sure it's symmetrical and cosmetically looks the right way. So,
are you able to do any type of weight training right now in terms of upper body, or are you just laying off totally?
No, I'm working my right side because I know if you work your one side of your body, you lose less muscle on the side that's injured. So, you know, I'm not training. Obviously, I'm not training to put size on my right side. I'm just training to still stimulate the muscles and the brain to send signals to the fibers so we can stay, you know, so we don't lose as much muscle, you know, and that's really what we're doing right now. I'm doing legs, still doing legs hard. And then just training my upper body moderately. So, you know, I can't have too much legs, you know, so I'm not worried about that. So we keep training that hard and staying active because it was driving me nuts not to do anything. So definitely. And, you know, if you don't want to get yourself in a rut that when I come back, you know, I have to build from scratch either. So,
Fred, one thing I wanted to ask you is that you're a father, you're a husband of four children. Bodybuilding is a very selfish sport. How are you able to balance, you know, being a family man with professional bodybuilding? Like, that's something I really admire.
You know, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, it was easier when my older kids were younger because they weren't involved as much. So, I just try and make them part of everything, you know, like when I was, this past summer was perfect. Like, you know, I said to, you know, my ex-wife, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to take the kids this summer as much because, you know, I'm training and I'm getting ready for shows. And what I found out is, you know, the kids, they like being part of it. They like being part of it. They like training next to dad. They like seeing dad do his thing. They like going to the shows. They like, when I guest pose locally, I bring them all in and they guest pose with me. So they enjoy it. You know, like I took my son to one of my guest posings, my older son to one of my guest posings, and he brought his friend, and his friend thought that was like the coolest thing ever, you know, because, you know, I mean, what kid wouldn't want to see their dad being like, you know, getting standing ovations and people yelling and screaming for him when they get to see their dad perform, you know? And then more importantly, when I'm training at night, they're training with me, you know, sometimes. And, my younger two, they're not at that age where they can train and do stuff like that, but they get a kick out of watching dad on YouTube, and they get to tell their friends, and their teachers will pull it up in school. And so it's just kind of like, you know, it just involves them in everything. Dad, why are you eating that way? Well, this is why I'm eating that way. And when we go, I don't tell them, you know, they need to sacrifice anything. Like, well, I was 4 weeks out from the Olympia, and we went on a family vacation. But, and the way I worked it was, you know, I get up before everybody else get up, and I go do my cardio, and then we come back, I get them, we go out to breakfast, I watch them eat, and then we go do whatever activity we're going to do in the morning, usually swimming or something on the beach. And then when we come back, everybody else taking a nap or taking a rest, and I go train. And then when I come back from training, then we do our nighttime activity. So it's really, if you want it to work, it'll work. You know, it's not that hard, because, you know, especially now, it's such a blessing to be able to be on a world stage competing in something you love to do. Like, I mean, that's just a blessing to have. So instead of looking at it like, man, it's so tough, I just try and remember what a blessing it is. And you know, when I was trying to turn pro, remembering those frustrations of when, you know, you're right there, you're taking third at the Nationals three times before you get your pro card. You remember that, remember that frustration, and you realize, man, you know, it's a blessing to be on this level. So,
I mean, for those who don't know, Fred's been, you know, on Mr. Olympia. He's got top 15 finishes at Mr. Olympia the past few years. So if you guys go and check that out, the Mr. Olympia standings or the results, you'll see his name on there. So it's very, very impressive. What he's accomplished. So you guys really should go on there and read a little bit about him. But I want to ask you real quick, Fred, because I know Trevor has a couple questions for you. I saw something today from Brett Favre, former NFL quarterback, and he's trying to get football banned, tackle football banned for those under 12 years old, and he would never want his, you know, children, grandchildren playing football. You know, so you brought up, you know, your son loves to watch you and stuff. Would you encourage him to get into bodybuilding as well, or would you encourage him to do something else? I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
I wouldn't deter him from getting into bodybuilding. I would deter him from getting into bodybuilding until after he's gone through college and stuff like that, because I mean bodybuilding is awesome from the sense of if you use what is necessary in terms of what you learn, the discipline necessary, the focus necessary to attain the results you're looking for, to be good at bodybuilding. If you put those disciplines in any part of life, you're going to be successful. So from that standpoint, it's great. I think the hardest part for kids is there's no balance. Like when you're young, you're usually so gung-ho about something, and sometimes you don't create balance for yourself. And so bodybuilding will alienate a lot of people. You know, because it takes a very strong-minded person to do this, and to be consistent at it, a lot of people can do it one time, but to continue to do it over and over again and be consistent, it takes such a strong-minded person to do that. And a lot of people, when they're young, just aren't that way. So, you know, I think I would never say no, don't do it. You know, if they wanted to try it, I would coach them and be very supportive of it, because I think there's a lot of great things about bodybuilding. Of course, there's, you know, a darker side of bodybuilding. But again, like, if you understand that you can't make things go faster than they naturally are supposed to go, and most of the guys that do end up with bad problems. So, you know, if you're just bodybuilding and you think you're going to gain 50 pounds of muscle and I'm going to do whatever it takes to gain 50 pounds of muscle in the next year, you're going to have problems. But if you go in there and you train for a few years letting your body naturally take the, you know, the progression it's supposed to. You train hard, you train smart, you eat the food, and you use the supplementation as a last resort. People get it twisted. They think they're going to take supplements and it's going to get, and they're going to be huge, you know, and the thing is that comes at a big cost that I don't think a lot of people realize and aren't really willing to pay if they really knew the risk of that. So for me, I try and teach, you know, it's about nutrition and it's about the exercising. You got to train hard, harder than what you really think you do, because you got to get your muscle to want to respond to greater demands all the time. And you have to feed it, and you have to eat copious amounts of food over and over and over again to get the body to feel like it's in a surplus to gain muscle. And muscle is not metabolically efficient, so you have to keep feeding it so your body doesn't want to lose it. So, and if you, as long as you get that through your head first, which takes a lot of amazing discipline and amazing focus, I think bodybuilding teaches a lot of positive things, you know, and it teaches you to not be thin skinned. You know, in this world, you have to be thick skinned to get ahead sometimes. And it definitely teaches that, because you're on a chopping block from the time you step on that stage. So, you know, I think it's so many positive benefits to bodybuilding. So I would never deter my kids from doing it.
So Fred, we got about 10 minutes left. Tell us a little bit about your training business. Do you take on all types of clients, or do you work strictly with competitors?
Me, myself personally, I deal with anything dealing with physique transformation. That's what I stick with. But my company as a whole, like I have everybody from, you know, I have a UD strength coach that works for me. I have MMA guys that work for me that train other MMA guys. I got pro powerlifters that work with me. And I have, you know, fitness models that work with me. So we have a staff of, you know, 7 full-time trainers, and then we have another 5 that kind of float in and out, do some part-time stuff. We have 2 locations. You know, we're in a Snap Fitness down in Middletown, Delaware. We're in the training center, which oddly enough is the gym I grew up in that I merged with when I shut my Golds down. We merged together, and I'm in that location in Newcastle, Delaware. So I got 1 location, more northern and 1 central Delaware, and we're looking to do another location down southern Delaware hopefully next year. So we just try and go into gyms and that are more like, you know, slower gyms that need a boost, and we go in there and we ramp up their personal training business, and you know, we try and make it so that we're the number one team in the industry in physique transformation, and we also work with athletes. So we do all of it.
And how can people get a hold of you or your company if they're interested in your services there?
We have, you know, the web, if you go to fredsmalls.com or abphysiques.com, that's our website. Of course, social media, we you know, just type in Fred Biggie Smalls for Instagram, or IFBB Pro Fred Biggie Smalls for Facebook. And again, same thing, abphysiques on Instagram or abphysiques on Facebook. So, you know, that's our business. That's how you can get in touch with us very easily. And for anybody that wants to kind of understand the educational part of it, you know, I have a series out on Generation Iron Network right now that you go to generationiron.com and just search Professor Smalls, and then my series comes up, or the Fred Biggie Smalls Show, and then there's a documentary on more about me. So, you know, any and everything you need to know to get in shape, and it's right here if you just got to contact me.
So, Fred, we got about 5 minutes left, and to finish up the show, I got 2 listener questions for you. First question is, what is your favorite cheat food? And the second question is, what do you like to do in your spare time?
My favorite cheat food is probably subs. Italian subs, cheesesteaks, stuff like that. My coach, George Ferrer, is always joking with, he's like, man, all you do is love sandwiches. So that's probably definitely my favorite cheat meal.
Is there a particular place, Fred, that you like going to for subs?
Don't say Subway, because we bash Subway on this show.
Yeah, Subway is horrible, man. Yeah, there's a place called Capriati's. They actually have a few locations nationally as well as locally. And then Jersey Mike's. I like Jersey Mike's a lot too. So those are the two places I like most. And then as far as what I do in my spare time, I love watching my kids play their sports. You know, like all my kids are playing various sports, and I get a big kick out of seeing them compete. And, you know, like I told you earlier in the show, I'm always teaching them, you know, effort is the only thing control. So, you know, and I think that's wearing off on them. And to see them putting up, you know, great effort is always what I'm looking for. I love it. And then I love dancing. So, you know, anytime I get an opportunity to go dancing, I love to do that. So those are two, like two of my favorite things.
Well, Fred, we really appreciate you coming on the show. You gave a lot of really good information. Guys, Fred is a really good guy. Make sure to follow him on Instagram, follow him on YouTube. If you're looking for a knowledgeable coach, hit him up. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, IFBB Pro, Fred Biggie Smalls, this is another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.